Lord, I do just thank you for tonight. I thank you for your grace in my life, that I do have a passion and a heart for women who struggle with eating and body image, because I have been there and lived in a pit of loneliness and despair for 20 years. And you, in your grace and your powerful just ways that you can bring about freedom. And it is so sweet to get to share. And it's so sweet, the testimonies that will be shared tonight of the way that you work when your will and your ways are heeded. And so, Lord, I just pray for the women here that I know you can come here and sort of be have issues and know you have issues, and you can come and think you don't have any. And so, Lord, I just pray really that your truth would penetrate the hearts in whatever way they need to. So, Father, we do just come before you and rest in you and your character and in your word, knowing that it is your word and your spirit that transforms lives. And we thank you for the privilege of getting to partner with you and be a part of what you desire to do. So we give tonight to you, and it is for your glory. In Christ's name, amen. All right. Well, my name is Cynthia Culver, and there are a handful of us tonight that have the privilege of sharing with you about what God has taught us in the area of eating and body image, and where we're coming from, and the hope that we have found in Christ. And you're going to be able to watch some of the stuff that's going on the screen, and we're going to come to that in a little bit. So feel free to watch what Jen Bowers is working on, and just listen as you can. I am going to read to you a little bit. Well, one of the things that I have such a heart for this is because I really believe in so many ways, you know, God calls us to be set apart, to draw others to himself. When he set apart Israel, it was to draw others to him, to look at them and to look at their lives and to say, wow, these people are so blessed. Who is this God that you serve? And that's what the Lord calls of all of us. And I will tell you that in the area of eating and body image, as believers, we don't look any different than the rest of the world. We chase after the same things that the rest of the world chases after: appearance, looking a certain way, being thin, exercising, over-exercising. Nothing wrong with exercising. We'll come to that in a little bit. But we do not look any different. And I really believe this is an area that if we properly listen to the Lord and his word and his truth and walk in his ways, that it can be used to draw others to him, because there is freedom from this. And our culture just does, I mean, a number on us. And we're going to talk some about that tonight. And I'm real excited to get to talk about some of the stuff that even Jen's working on up there on the screen. I'm going to read to you just so that you know sort of where I'm coming from. As I, in my prayer, shared, I have a history of 20 years of a struggle with eating and body image. 20 years from the time I was probably between 7 and 10 until, I guess that would make me about 30. And that is really when the Lord began to bring about healing and growth in my life. And so I'm going to read something to you that was from September the 3rd, 2000. And that is from my journal. And I will tell you that it was about 4 years later that I started doing body image seminars. And it was amazing to me that in 4 years, what God can do. In a short period of time, some of the girls you're going to hear from tonight, their healing started 4 months ago. And God is doing an amazing work. And so, anyway, this is September 3rd, 2000, my journal. Says, Lord, the root of my lack of peace is the war waging in my body. I am at war within. My spirit, your spirit in me says one thing, and my flesh and lust for indulgence says another. I consistently look to food for feelings of life. I look to it as a friend, a comfort, a habit, a pleasure. My flesh thinks of it most of each day. Lord, help me gain freedom over this. I desire the peace within. It rips all of the fruit out of my life: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. It destroys the abundant life you came to give me. This is wrong. I know you would have me conquer it. You say in Genesis 4:7, if you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must master it. I cannot defeat it on my own in my flesh. You must help me, Lord. And I really was. I was in a pit that was pretty deep. That there was not a lot of joy in my life because I was obsessed with food and body image. And the truth is, I think the thing for me is that I didn't fall on either end of the spectrum. I remember looking in the Yellow Pages for Overeaters Anonymous. I was like, I don't know where I fit. I wish I'd been bulimic or anorexic so I would have known where to go to get help. I was like, where do I go? I just know I feel crazy because I'm obsessed with this. And it didn't occur to me until a couple of years later. I was like, oh, there is something wrong. You have eating disordered thinking, and it's every bit as destructive as this other stuff. So a little bit of my story and background, which you'll get to hear a little bit more later. But I just want to tell you that my hope for our time tonight is to encourage you toward the freedom that comes only through a relationship with Christ. And I think so often it's, you know, I remember pray more, read more, pray more, read more. Lord, if you can take this from me, how come you don't? How come you don't take this from me if you can? And I will just tell you that tonight, I hope that you walk away. My prayer is that you walk away with the knowledge that he does give you tools. He makes available tools for you, but you have to avail yourself and take responsibility to use some of the tools that he's made available to you. And again, we'll talk about that toward the end of the night. So again, another goal for our time together for y'all is that you might be able to enjoy and experience an intimate walk with the Savior. Because I know that when I stopped counting calories on January 1st of whatever year it was, that I was like, I cannot do this anymore. That after one day, I was like, I have been enslaved for 20 years. Not free to be all that Christ has called me to be. Not free to know him fully. Not free to be available to him. And I had been enslaved. And so my hope for you is that you might walk away and understand the freedom and have some tools to walk forward and go, I know how to walk forward and begin to experience some of that freedom. And then just John 10:10, the thief comes to rob, kill, and destroy. And Christ says, but I have come that you may have life and have it to the full. And the truth is there is a full life for all of us available. So if you come tonight and you're like, I don't know how I'll ever get out of this, just know that Christ, through his will and ways and spirit and word, can do that in your life. He can do that. I am confident. I am living testimony. And you're going to hear from several other living testimonies tonight. So an overview of tonight is we're going to have five parts. If you look when you get to your tables, if you're not there, if you're at your tables, there's some handouts. There are three handouts on each table. One of the handouts is just a place for you to take notes, okay? And I really divided everything up into four sections. The first section is called Evaluating Your Value, okay? Evaluating Your Value. And that's really the essence of the title of the seminar, which is Image. Is it your currency? Is it your currency? Who's determining your value, the culture or the creator? Okay, so that's the first section, evaluating your value. The second section is going to be exercise. We're going to talk about exercise. And then the third section is going to be on eating, also called intuitive eating. And then the last section is going to be on emotions. So when you can't listen to the signals that God has given you that we're going to talk about, which are hunger and fullness, what is going on in your heart that's causing you to use food or to use anything else to cope and to cover those things up? And then lastly, and we're really going to hope we have time for this. We're going to try to stay on task, if at all possible. But we're going to have a panel. Everyone that speaks tonight, the people that give their testimonies, Jim Bowers, and then another friend that I work with, Stephanie Rushing, who's a registered dietitian. I'm going to have everybody come up here and sort of have a panel of Q&A. And I'd love for you as we go, there's a section at the bottom for application for your own life and also for questions. So as you go, if you have questions, jot them down at the bottom. And if you want to write them down and give it to us or whatever, we're going to have some time at the end for you to ask questions. All right? Any questions before we get started? Anyone? Nope. All right. We're going to jump into the first section, which is called Evaluating Your Value.
The media has idealized what the perfect woman and the perfect man should look like. It has redefined our definition of what beautiful is.
Big breasts, nice butt,
have a nice body,
blue eyes,
hourglass figure.
You just have to be taller than me.
Good smile.
Breast headed.
Nice eyes.
Nice rack.
Dark hair.
Have to be hot.
Beauty is now based on body shape and size. We are not satisfied with the way we look when we don't meet the unrealistic standards that the media has set, which often results in creating a poor self-image or supporting destructive behaviors such as eating disorders.
What influenced me to become bulimic was watching like the perfect bodies on TV. You see a girl weighing like 90 pounds, you're taught that's good, that's pretty, that's what you want to look like, that's what you want to be, that's who you need to be.
A psychological study in 1995 found that 3 minutes spent looking at a fashion magazine caused 70% of women to feel depressed, guilty, and shameful.
That's pretty powerful, isn't it? Pretty powerful. So, what are the messages that we're getting? I had some girls help me out and write down some of the things that they said, and I'm just going to read them off. I mean, my favorite is nice rack. I'm like, that was the one I could remember. It's like, what? Anyway, so it's talking about the things that are appealing. What is appealing about people? Perfect body, nice butt, hourglass figure, nice rack, has to be hot, beautiful, big breast, nice eyes, nice hair, dark hair, taller than me, hot. Oh, if I have this thing, that'd be so great. I don't think I do. Wait. I wasn't going to show you all this, but if I have it, I'm going to, because I thought it was so random and it fits perfectly. There's this thing I pulled out of a magazine, and it was so weird. It was this this ad that they had put together. They'd taken from all the guys, like Matthew McConaughey's abs and Patrick Dempsey's hair and all these different things. And the best part on every of the hottest guy and put them all into one guy. And I'm so bummed because I don't think I have it. And it was the most distorted, weird looking thing you've ever seen. I was like, he looks weird. His hair is, okay, I don't have it. Sorry. Anyway, but that's essentially what, I mean, sort of the, what they're saying here is they want all these different things. They've got to have all these different things. So what are those messages? You've got to have a certain thing in order to be beautiful. Now, it's different to everybody, but there is some element of outward appearance is important. And I love this quote. A psychological study in 1995 found that three minutes spent looking at a fashion magazine caused 70% of women to feel depressed, guilty, and shameful. And I will tell you that as I started working on some stuff, I start getting mad. Because I have the privilege of getting to counsel women and meet with women. And this issue is so, it is so enslaving. And I hear that and I'm like, this is the kind of stuff that you look at a magazine and you see what people expect and you see all this stuff. And all of a sudden you're like, I don't meet that and I'm shameful. And then you become in bondage. And I'm like, Satan is at work in this area. And my prayer is that we can make the Lord's case for just all of the different things that combine contribute to this problem. Here's some of the other messages. If I could look like, fill in the blank for you, you've got that person, you probably got 10 of them. If I could look like them, then I would find happiness, contentment, joy. Here's another one. Outward perfection is possible if I'll just try harder. I can remember someone telling me, if you just go to the gym 4 or 5 times, you know, you could lose some of that cellulite. I can remember that. And I tried, and I was so frustrated because no matter how small, no matter how big I've ever been, I have cellulite. I can't get rid of it, period. And I'm used to that, and I have to be okay with that. It doesn't mean I love it. But that's part of the way that my body is made. And it has to be okay. Another message. I will be happy when skinnier, prettier, more popular, better grades, better job, more money, fill in the blank. Another message. We are superior or inferior to others based on what we look like. I know that in a group this size of women, that there are women in here that are sizing other people up and saying, I'm cuter or I'm not cuter, I'm less cute, and I'm inferior. I mean, I spent years, I'm inferior based on fill in the blank, what I look like. We are more or less lovable. I'm still on messages. We are more or less lovable or likable based on our appearance. And then you're more likely to like yourself if you have the right. And I just made a list of things. I was like, okay, if you have the right shade of white on your teeth. I mean, there are some teeth bleachers, right? I'm a newly confessed teeth bleacher. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know why I started. I got sucked in, and here I am. I haven't done it lately because it did start hurting my gums. But anyway, but color of hair, got to have the right color of hair. Can't have any gray hair. I just started coloring my hair, 38. I got sucked in. And so I'm just saying, I'm guilty of this stuff too. But here the messages are, you're going to like yourself more if you look better. Nails, toenails. If I have the right height of heel with the right length of skirt and the right color jeans. I mean, can y'all relate to me? And there is this moving target that we are all trying to hit. There is a moving target, and it is this constant, I can't quite get there. I cannot get there. But I know I'll like myself more if I can. And that is a lie. The final message, your value, worth, and significance come from what you look like, not just your body, but your overall appearance. And outward perfection is the key to inner peace and joy. And I list all those out. I got them from different places. But those are the messages that our culture sends us. And we're going to talk about where do they come from. Because you know what I really want to happen if you didn't walk away with anything else tonight, aside from the Lord can bring you freedom through a relationship with Jesus Christ, is that there are things that contribute to that insatiable desire and need to strive toward this perfection, and then it leaves you empty. But I want you to be able to recognize what those things are, to recognize what they are, and to see them for what they are. And so, next section is, so what the messages are, and now where do we get these messages? And I just picked three different places. I'm sure there are more. But we're going to start with, number one, media. Now, see, I've got on these jeans that I think are supposed to be cool, and I can't even bend over without showing my underwear. I got sucked in. Okay. So where do we get these messages? I don't know. Hair and makeup preview. Get a better body. I actually like to look. Last night I was like, okay, I want to see what has the largest font. Which section? Get a better body has the largest font. This one is 6 ways to thin. Change is good, special makeup issue, get sexy, oh, so long cellulite. I'm going to keep this one. 13 tips for smooth, sleek thighs. People half their size. I haven't read that one. Okay, that's not for that. Let's see. The 25 best bodies. Get Jen Garner's killer abs. Y'all can fight for this one if you'd like. The ultimate diet secret. It's not about carbs, fat, or cutting out anything. Okay, that might be good. But then on the other hand, we've got butt lifters. 3 booty boosters. Let's see. A lifestyle fixes for flawless skin. Oprah, be the woman you want to be. She's not, you know, she doesn't fall into that category. Get the body you want. Get the body you want. Shiny hair, 27 new pants you'll love. Make the most of your shape. Look taller, slimmer, or curvier right now. Okay? I don't know where we get these messages. I can't figure it out. But we're certainly not exposed to anything, any of those messages. I mean, you can't go in the grocery store, you can't go in 7-Eleven, you can't go anywhere without being bombarded with that. You cannot go anywhere. And so they are coming in, and so you've got to learn to filter them out. Okay. Second place, watch with me. I saw that the first time, and I was like, that ticks me off. Because, why? I mean, I didn't think she was all that pretty at the end. I thought it was sort of weird. But for the most part, that's not real. I can say that because she's not real. That is not real stuff. I mean, the things that we think we look at are real, that we're striving after, are not even reality. They're not even reality. How did our idea of beauty get so distorted? That's how the video opens. No wonder our idea of beauty is so distorted. No wonder. Cindy Crawford, I've heard, said, yeah, I wish I looked like Cindy Crawford, too. She said that. Why? Because they fix her up. They edit her. Kate, Jennifer Bowers told me that Kate Winslet, did she sue them? She's not sure about that. But I think Jamie Lee Curtis did sue one of the magazines because they were like, that's not what I look like. You've misrepresented my body. You know, and I'm so thrilled that they're speaking out and saying, that's not me. Because it is distorted. A friend of mine, Karen Riddle, I talked to today, she said, and I could have the numbers wrong on this, but I think it's 10 years ago, she said the average size of a runway model was a size 6. Does anyone have a guess as to what it is now? Yep. Yeah. So our culture is shifting so far in one direction, and we are going right along with it. We are getting sucked into thinking that a zero looks good. And I'm going to bring my friend Jen Bowers up, who actually, you've been watching a little bit beforehand, we're watching what she was doing. She does photo editing and for a living. And so we spent a little time last night talking about this, and she's been doing some live retouching. And so she's going to come up and share a little bit, just a couple of things.
Like Cynthia said, I've been doing a little bit of live photo editing, and that's what I do every day, all day long. I work on images of people, of hotel rooms, of resorts. I constantly am changing the appearance of what things look like. And although I'm not going nearly as fast as the Dove commercial, it's essentially the same thing. I completely change what you see in a magazine. And the really sweet lady that I'm working on gave me permission, so don't think that if you come see me, I'm going to put your face something for watermark. But she's a real estate agent. She's not trying to be a model. She's not going to be on a commercial or anything like that. That's just the image that she wants to portray as a real estate agent. So everything from small brochures to high-end fashion magazines, it's retouched. Nothing that you see is the way it is. And it's really sad that that's where we go to find out, you know, if we're pretty or if we measure up or anything like that. And so I think my heart for all of this is just to show you that it is, a lot of what you see is fake, that there's not a whole lot of truth in any of the magazines. And so basically that's it.
Can you show them before and after?
Sure.
So far. She's going to keep working. If we have some time, we're going to look at the before and after at the end of the section. But I think the thing that struck me so much as she was working last night is I was like, this is so real. It looks so real, and it looks so good. Can y'all see that? Can you see the difference? I'm like, oh, can you show me her face? She replaced one of her eyes. She put one eye on the other eye. Can you see the difference? I mean, it's amazing, amazing what they can do. And it looks so real, and it looks so good. I mean, and here's the thing. I mean, we were laughing last night. Angie and Emily, Ruth, and Jim were at my house. And Emily had a picture that she needed to have touched up before she could give it to her date. She's like, we need to have this touched up. And I was like, I'd like to see how good I could look. And, I mean, in all seriousness, we were laughing so hard. We were like, you get sucked into this. And it is amazing, and it is so real. It looks so real, but that's what you need to see is it is not real. It is not real. She shaved off her cheeks. She changed her eyes. She thinned out her legs and her hips and her pant wrinkles. It is not reality. It is not as it appears. It's just amazing. And I think that my heart in showing y'all this is, I think it's sometimes hard to take people's word for it. I want you to see it. I want you to see it in action, that she has been sitting here doing this since 6:15. I was like, will you get here early and start working on it so that they can see the before and after? She did So this is since she's been here, been working on it. And that's amazing. One of the places that we get our messages are where? The media. Okay? The media. Clearly. Based on magazines and photo editing and all those different things. And then the second way that we're going to talk about it is what's modeled for us. What is modeled for us? And this is a little section that's going to be for moms. And so if you're a mom here or you want to be a mom someday, so it really is for everyone. I want you to hear this. But here's what I want to say is that we formulate beliefs about what is important early in life by watching and listening to our parents. And as a child, it never occurs to you that your parents aren't always right. It never occurs to you as a 6-year-old or 10-year-old or 12-year-old, 13-year-old, as you're formulating what's important to you, it never crosses your mind that they may not have it all right. And you formulate your beliefs about those things early. This is not about blaming or causing at all. Please don't hear me say that. It is about how we contribute to the problem. It is about how we contribute. And the thing is that parents do not have to say anything for a kid to know what's important to them. You do not have to say a word. Kids know what's important. And I will tell you, I'm going to give you a list of things that when, just so that you know that you are sending a message, okay? So, moms and dads, and I would extrapolate this to friends, mentors. If you've got people that look to you in any way, form, or fashion, and they hear you do these things, it sends a loud and clear message, no different than what's on the front of the cover of these magazines. When you diet, when you make comments about the size of your own arms and legs and thighs and whatever, when you make comments about other people's size, when you make derogatory remarks about people based on their appearance, you send a message. When you talk about your weight, when you weigh on a daily basis or as a habit, when you focus on losing weight, toning up, burning calories, cutting back on carbs, when you connect exercise as a means of weight loss instead of for the other benefits that we'll talk about later, when you put a high priority on looks and appearance, including clothes, and when you get stressed out about your appearance. When you do all those things, your actions speak so loudly, they do not hear your words. And the thing is, a lot of those things are verbal messages, but I will tell you that a lot of them aren't even, like as a parent, you don't even have to speak to your child about the issue. You can stand in front of the mirror and go, oh, my gosh, my thighs. Oh, my God, my arms are so flabby. Oh, this size doesn't fit. My pants don't fit. And experience the anxiety your kids know. Your kids know. That is just the way that it is. Your kids pick up so much more on what you do than what you say. If appearance is important to you, whether it's body or fashion or whatever, they know it. And I'm not saying that being your average normal body weight is bad. Don't hear me say that. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. It's not bad to look cute or to want to look good. But the focus on it has gotten so blown out of proportion that everyone is getting their identity, security, significance, and lack thereof from the outward appearance. And that is unbiblical and wrong. Unbiblical and wrong. And we're going to talk about what the Lord has to say about that in a little bit. So your daughters know how you feel about your body and when you are worried about theirs. Daughters know when their mothers are worried about their weight. I don't know percentages, but I am sure they know. It is not uncommon that I hear parents comparing their two daughters. You know, one of my daughters is she's tall and skinny, and the other one's, well, she's sort of short and stocky, and I'm concerned. And I'm like, do you think, and I'll say, do you think that she knows that? No, I'd never say that to her. And I'm like, bull if she doesn't know that. Bull if she does not know that is what you're thinking. And that's the thing, is it comes out in the way that you live. In the decisions that you make, the things that you say, it comes out no matter how hard you try. Our parents say all the time, oh, I'm worried she's going to have trouble with her weight. This one, she can eat anything, but this one, oh, she can't. So which one in the tall and skinny versus the short and stocky do you think they're concerned about? The short and stocky. Absolutely. And so which one do you think they think is more desirable? Yeah. So do you think someone that's short and stocky has any control over that? I mean, seriously, shake your head if you think that they have control over that. I mean, that's the way God made them. That is the way the Lord made them. And I just want to challenge you, who set up that standard? Who set the standard that tall and skinny is better than short and stocky? And I'm going to read to you from Psalm 139 because I think it is an absolute, I cannot imagine how angry it makes the Lord that we would hold up tall and skinny as better than short and stocky when he created both. And I can't imagine that he thinks of them differently. Psalm 139, and I love this so much. Psalm 139:13. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. The word knit, it is not some, I just blinked my eye and it was done. Knit is an intricately woven word choice. It is this intricate weaving. God wove together every single one of you. Every single one of you that have kids, that have families, everyone has been knit together in their mother's womb by the Lord. That means that your body that he has given you is of value to him and should be to you. And if someone has told you otherwise, I would say that they are wrong and he is right. I praise you, verse 14, I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. And I love this word, my frame, my 5'6", now, 100 and however much I weigh, my frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. Does that suggest to you that your body that you've been given to you was just by chance? No, it doesn't. And I just want to challenge our thoughts and our views on what is good and what we hold up and what we esteem. Because when, as a parent, you hold up the frame of one child over another, that they have no control over, that is wrong. And it sends a message to them that they're not as valuable. And that is not God's message. That is not his message. And I will tell you that parents and family need to be a safe place for kids to come home and to deal with, because see, we've already talked about magazines and we've looked at the media. We're all getting these messages. So where's the place that they can come in to the shelter from the storm and say, oh, someone, please tell me that I am worth something, that I am valuable just the way that I am. It has to be at home. It has to be at home. If they can't come home and know that they're fully loved and fully valued no matter what they look like, they are not going to walk this life with the value that God intends. So I want to challenge you as parents, moms, go home and take this message to the dads. Are just as I see more people in counseling, dads are, they're as equally sucked in as we are. That your kids are valuable no matter what their frame or form. And we've got to encourage them and tell them that. They need to come home and hear the words, You were given just the body you have, and it is lovable, acceptable, good, and valuable. And I talk to parents a lot about the difference between intent and execution, okay? Because I believe that, most of the time until proven otherwise, that parents' intention is good. You love your kids. You do anything for them. You die for them. I know you're not trying to hurt them. But that's our fallen nature. We're going to hurt people. And I know it is so, so painful. And we talk in terms of, again, the difference between the intent and then execution. It's the execution that sometimes needs a little bit of help. And so that's what this part is about, is helping you execute in a way that is helpful. Because I know that you want to be helpful. And actually, I had a visit with my good friend, Karen Riddle. Come on up. If you've seen her around, you know that we're not related, but that we look like twins. And tonight, we actually dress like twins, but not on purpose. Karen and I have known each other for a couple of years. You want to grab that? And just have had the opportunity to have some really fun and honest conversations. She called me one time in the last 6 months and just wanted to visit about some stuff. And I really do feel like last night I was typing and I was like, she popped into my head and I was like, this is such a long shot. I just felt like the Lord prompted me, call her. And so I called her last night, left her a message. She called me this morning. And I was like, would you share some of the stuff we've talked about? Because I think it would be so powerful for the moms. I'm not a mom. I'd like to be, but I'm not right now. And I was like, for the moms to hear from a mom who has been on both sides, is working through, has wonderful intent, but execution needed a little work, and how she's worked through that.
I knew when Cynthia called and left. Well, I got her message this morning, and when I saw that it was Cynthia, I said, she's going to want me to talk tonight. And I hadn't even listened to your message. I was like, oh, man, she's going to want me to talk. So look at my notes. Look, they're just like all kind of backwards, upside down, all kind of stuff. And I had to actually ask my daughter this morning. I said, Cynthia called and asked me if I would talk tonight. And she was already planning on coming to this with her fabulous small group leader. And I said, would you be okay? Would you be comfortable if I shared some of this with the women there tonight? And she said, yes, as long as you don't cry. And so I'm going to adhere to that. I stand before you as someone who has struggled with body image and still struggles. And one of the things that I would just like to be able to share, just my heart in dealing with this just most recently with my daughter, is that even if there are a lot of those messages and those specific things, I never really said those out loud, but your kids know. And they can sense that from you. And it's just one of those things where we need to recognize that we put a lot of emphasis on it, even if we don't say anything. And we recently had a situation with my daughter where I could just sense that there was something really bothering her. And as a mom, I think when you have those times and you just can feel that there's something that you need to have a conversation with them about. And I've sat down on the couch with her one day and I said, I think there's something bothering you and I really want you to be able to feel comfortable talking to me about it. And she said, typical 12, almost 13, no, Mom, there's not anything. And I said, no, I think there is. And I just said, I'm not going to get up until we, talk about what it is. And through a lot of tears and through confession on my part as well and asking for forgiveness for things that I had done to contribute to this and to her feelings, there was reconciliation there through that. And I was able to share with her some of those verses that Cynthia just spoke about. That there's only one of her. There's only one. And God didn't want a whole bunch of her. He only wanted one of her. And how special that is. And in talking through that and recognizing that our whole family, she has two brothers who are very athletic and very active and very annoying, too, she would say. And there were some things revealed about comments that have been made by them. And I think siblings can hurt one another at times. And I think there's a lot of love there, but I think there's times when that can just really penetrate deeper than the love. And we, that evening, had a family meeting. And we all sat around, and we allowed her the opportunity to share with us her thoughts, her feelings, her hurts, her anger, her frustration, and just exactly how she felt. And we had an opportunity to ask for forgiveness, all of us, in that situation, and try to help her struggle well in that situation. And one of the things that I, when we're talking about, you know, in Genesis, where God talks about making male and female in his own image, and today, as I was thinking about just these notes and writing them down, I felt like God was saying, I made you in my image. And you want to mess with that? I mean, you want to spend all this time and energy thinking that there's something wrong with you when I made you in my image? God is perfect. And, I was so amazed when I was talking with my daughter this afternoon just about how she felt before we had, you know, this conversation and how she feels now. And she recently went through puberty. And I think as a parent, there are some things that happen, you know, that sometimes we're not aware of, or, you know, we think, oh, my goodness, you know, what's going on here? And we're all a little bit crazy. Girls gain 20 to 40 pounds when they do that. And they don't all do it at the same time. And so one of her struggles was that she had a lot of friends who weren't doing that. So she was, and, you know, changing, and things were growing and all of that. And we were having to go and, like, buy new jeans, and then maybe we were having to go and buy new jeans again. And so you see the people around you not experiencing that. And that's an opportunity as a parent for us to go before that happens and really talk to our daughters about that, about how the changes are going to happen and how that's normal. That is so normal. And I would love for all of us to cut all the tags out of our clothes and not care what size it is, because I've struggled with that as well. A couple of things that she said to me this afternoon was that she felt like it was not a big deal, that it was something, you know, that she didn't want to share with anybody else. And I think one of the lies that Satan tells us as women who struggle with this is that, you know, it really doesn't affect anybody else. Nobody else knows that you're kind of going throughout your day and you just had a, you know, a Starbucks and a piece of cake, and now you just can't live with yourself and you're mad at yourself for doing whatever. And it can be any kind of food or trying on clothes or whatever it is that's getting in your getting in the way of you being who God wants you to be. It's the lie that's floating all around us. And she just said, you know, one of the things she said, if we had all our beauty on the outside, we wouldn't desire him on the inside. And then she said, I talked to her, she said, you know, some people mature faster than others. And when I look around and see all the other friends that are thin or smaller than I am, it doesn't mean that there's something wrong with me. It just means that we're not going through the same thing at the same time. And I said, in that conversation of asking her how she felt before, she said, I felt like it was something that I shouldn't, it was not really a big deal. And once we shed light onto it and she was able to share about her how she really felt, and we were able to validate those feelings and say, we're very sorry that you feel that way, and we want to help you not feel that way anymore. And this afternoon, I'm happy to say, when I ask her how she feels now, she said, I like what I see when I look in the mirror. And so I think my message for y'all is that let's not allow ourselves to believe the lie so much that we then perpetuate it in our own daughters, or what, you know, I think sons could probably be affected by it some as well. Let's allow ourselves to be in the Word and have God heal us of those thoughts so that we can move forward in a positive way when our daughters are going through these things. And they're having images thrown at them all day long. Amanda also said that she wasn't really asking God for help, and that she realized that she needed to be in the Word more. And I just, as a parent, have just really struggled that, you know, what impact I had from someone who struggles with this as well and has for many years, what impact I had in that situation. And it was a sweet reminder this afternoon when we were talking that, you know, God gives us forgiveness and our children forgive us and we can move forward in a very positive way. Mm-hmm. Make a change.
Awesome.
Make a difference.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that. One of the reasons I think it's so powerful is because she and I got off the phone and, you know, we just talked about specifically her own views of different things. And she had gone home and sat down with Amanda, and she called me back a couple hours later and she says, well, I sat down with her and I had a conversation. And then she said that she asked for her forgiveness and that she reconciled with her. And I thought, you know, that and that's a hard thing to do if you've had to do that in your life. And if you haven't, you know, I don't know why, but I have a number of times. But for a parent to ask for forgiveness to a child when they have hurt them, sent messages that were not right, not affirmed them, it is so healing for a child. And the best thing that a parent can do is to get their own view on the matter straight and to see it the way that God sees it. And she went home and she reconciled and apologized and asked for forgiveness and was and came clean on her own stuff. And I think that's the thing is that we think we can hide our stuff, but you can't. You can't. They feel your anxiety when you're getting dressed and your clothes don't fit and you're frustrated. They feel the stress and the tension when you don't feel good about yourself. They know that stuff. You can't hide it. And so coming clean and saying, I don't want to put this onto you. Will you forgive me if I've done that? Is very healing and has allowed Amanda to be able to see herself in a right way. In the way that God views her. And so I was just so encouraged by that and encouraged by just how we're going to make mistakes. All of us. And God can use those mistakes to bring about our good and his glory, because he is a redeemer. That is who he is. He says, I will restore the years the locusts have eaten. That is what he does. But it does require us to respond rightly. So I want to read a couple of things. Children today are more afraid of getting fat than they are of nuclear war, getting cancer, or losing a parent. 42% of first to third grade girls want to be thinner. That's ages 6 to 8. 42%. Why? And I, you know what? My hope, I remember Todd saying this at the pornography talk. He said, we have to learn to hate it. And that is my hope tonight, is that you will learn to hate some of this stuff. That you will come away and say, this stuff is ruining our first to third grade girls. The ultimate diet secret. I pray you will learn to hate it because it is not right that they don't enjoy, respect, or love how God made them. 20% of people with anorexia will die as a result of their eating disorder. 10 million females and 1 million males in the U.S. struggle with anorexia nervosa or bulimia. 91% of women on college campuses have dieted. 13% of high school girls purge. 80% of American women are dissatisfied with their appearance. I cannot imagine why. This article was out of, I think it was the Park Cities News. I'm just going to read you a couple of clips from it because I was like, this is a secular newspaper that is catching on. I love it. It says, health officials are warning parents about the dangers of junk food and the lack of exercise. Yet few speak about parents who meticulously count every calorie that crosses their lips. That type of obsession can be just as destructive and eventually teaches their kids to weigh their self-worth on the scale. While fathers also play a crucial role in shaping their children's attitudes about food, and that's very true. Don't hear me say fathers are off the hook. They are not. It's just that women are more prone to that. Women are more prone. Research has focused primarily on women and their daughters since females are more likely to diet and worry about their body image. Frequent dieting by mothers was associated with frequent dieting by their adolescent daughters. The study also found that girls with mothers who had weight concerns, not issues, disorders, or problems, weight concerns. The study found that girls with mothers who had weight concerns were more likely to develop anxieties about their own bodies. If mother's diet, it is a marker of how important weight is in the household. That's it. One of the messages you need to recognize is if you diet in your home, it is a marker of how important weight loss is. It tells them this is an important thing. There is emphasis on it. And you know what? It's actually interesting. I can't remember the age, but there's a certain age when kids are, I want to say it's below 10. I'm not positive. But developmentally, kids do not think abstractly until they are more, they're over 10. They begin to be more mature. And you know what that means? It means that if you have a parent who is doing the low-carb diet and you've got a 9 or 10-year-old kid, that kid doesn't think, oh, they're my parent and they're needing to lose weight and so they're doing that. They think, well, they're doing that, so I must need to do that. It's called concrete thinking. Concrete thinking. They see what you do, they think they need to do that. They can't make the distinction. I saw a little girl in counseling for that very reason. My parent was doing this, and so I thought I needed to do it. What made you think that? Did they ever tell you that? No. But I saw that that's what they were doing, so I thought I needed to do that. That, and just so you know, that's below the age of 10. So again, you think, well, I'm not impacting them. They don't know. I'm not putting it on them. I'm not commenting on their body. They know. They know. Even small cues such as making self-deprecating remarks about bulging thighs or squealing in delight over a few lost pounds can send the message that thinness is to be prized above all else. Parents, especially moms, need to understand kids watch and hear things even at an early age and are like little sponges, walking the line between encouraging healthy habits. We're going to talk about that. That's a good thing. Walking the line between encouraging healthy habits and not making an issue of weight can be tough, especially with parents already bearing the blame for rising obesity. The best strategy is to lead by example. If a fad diet isn't right for the child, what makes it right for the parent? You'd never put your kid on a low-carb diet. Right? So why is it okay? And I say all that because I want you to hear the message. Those are the messages you're sending. So the best thing you can do is to deal with your issues with it. And I will tell you just one more thing on this. What causes an unhealthy focus on food and what really causes eating disorders? Parents are always like, what causes eating disorders? I want to do whatever I can do to avoid it. This is part of it. It contributes, not cause. Here is one of the key things. There's rarely a simple explanation. This gives a list of things. But here's the common thing. The common thread in all of these scenarios that it gave is that a person is experiencing emotional pain at a level of intensity that she does not know how to manage in a healthy way, mainly because she did not learn to express feelings directly while growing up. Many families are not able to model or teach how to express feelings in a way that promotes closeness, support, or resolution of conflict. So when a person who grew up lacking these skills experiences intense emotional pain, she lacks the tools to talk about it or ask for support. Eating disorders are never about food. Period. They're not about food. It is at this point, when they're experiencing the intense emotional pain, that something significant happens. The person begins to focus upon her body or food, looking outside rather than inside for the source and solution to the emotional pain. Once this starts, the person travels down one of two paths. The first path is she begins to eat and find food as a source of comfort and nurturing. Food is consistent, reliable, and always there. It is something to look forward to coming home at the end of every day and something to which to turn to when alone and scared. See also Cynthia Culver at age 7. And emotional pain, turning to food, not knowing how to deal with it. The person finds that when she eats, the pain does not hurt quite as much. This person is vulnerable to becoming overweight or obese due to compulsive eating. Following the second path, the person begins to restrict food intake or to binge and purge and starts to lose weight. As she loses weight, people make comments like, oh, you look so good. You've lost weight. In a world that is very painful, suddenly there is something that feels good, brings positive attention, and is within her control. Eating disorders, I've got one word for you, control. It's about control. Whether it's eating or not eating, it's about control. It's about controlling something. I'm in so much pain on the inside, I have got to make it go away. And I find a way to do that. And they travel down one of two paths. They can travel down other paths as well, but relative to food. The person finds that the more she focuses on counting calories, exercising, dieting, losing weight, or purging, the less she feels the emotional pain. This is vulnerable to developing anorexia or bulimia. So how do eating disorders develop? That's how. So if you want to work toward, the best thing you can do with your kids is teach them and model for them how to talk about their feelings. We joke about it. My friends know I have a feeling chart at work. You have to identify your feelings. Emily says sometimes I pull it out at home. How does that make you feel? And that's the big joke, but the truth is that's what's going on. And when you can, and most people, I have kids at my office, can you identify your feeling? They're pretty good. And they like it. You get an adult sit in the office, they look at the thing, and I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't like any of those. And that's how we operate. I don't like that feeling, so I make it go away. I make it go away. Okay, last, this is the third way. We talked about media, we talked about modeling, and now the last place that we get these messages is, I was like, I can't do this without talking about the third M, which is the master of lies. And I just hope so much that we can see this for what it is. Ephesians 6:10 says, finally be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God. Here it is, so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. If you don't think that all of this is one of his schemes to distract you from knowing the Lord and loving him and being able to be in a relationship with him and to be able to enjoy your life, if you don't think that's one of his schemes, he loves that. Great. He is so covert. That is one of his schemes. This is the way to happiness, not through a relationship with the Lord. You're going to find it here. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. And then our admonition, therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground, and after you have done everything, to stand. Stand firm then with the belt of truth buckled around your waist, with the breastplate of righteousness in place, and with your feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. The third way that we're influenced is through him, through his schemes. And we have to recognize them for what they are. I went to Africa this summer, and Satan's schemes are pretty blatant. They're poverty, killing, death, AIDS, destruction. It's terrible. And you look at it and you're like, wow, this is awful. Abuse. It's sick. And then you come back over here and you're like, he is equally at work, but we don't even see it. We are blind. Blind to his schemes. As we continue to pursue finding our value and our significance and all this stuff and coming up empty and continuing to go back to a well that never fills us up. That is his scheme. And I will tell you, from looking at our culture, I think he's winning in some ways. He hasn't won the war, but he is winning the daily battles. And so my prayer is that we would walk away from this and just recognize the destruction. So what's the problem? Romans 12:2, do not be conformed any longer to the patterns of this world. Do not be conformed any longer to the patterns of this world. That's our problem. We have the wrong goal. We are conforming to the patterns of this world. Our culture teaches us that what is important and what makes us acceptable and lovable and great is, in reality, fading and fleeting. They teach us that our culture says you're acceptable, lovable, great based on these things. But those things are fading and fleeting. Proverbs 31 says, charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Isaiah 53, 2 and 3 says, he, talking about Christ, he had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and familiar with suffering. Like one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised and we esteemed him not. And I just thought, you know, outward beauty in a person does not equate to greatness, character, holiness, or perfection. See also Christ. In this description of him, that he had no beauty, a majesty that attracted us to him. And he was great and perfect and holy and had character and was everything we should desire. But he was not beautiful by the world's standards. Outward beauty is a good thing. There is nothing wrong with it. If you know, the Lord created all of us. There's beauty in all of us. It is from the Lord. Seeking outward beauty is not the goal. It is not the goal. And the problem is that having the wrong goal creates a belief system by which you begin to live your life. Everything you do begins to revolve around it. It becomes an idol in your life. For me, it meant that I will be happy when I lose a certain amount of weight, when I get rid of my cellulite, which is never. I will be happier when. That's what it meant. And it created chaos in my life because that's what I began to pursue. If I need to go to the gym 4 or 5 days a week, well, I'll just do that for an hour. And if I can't do that, then I'll work my way around it and I'll do all these other things to compensate. And it becomes the thing that I am so focused on. When we seek to find life in places other than our relationship with Christ, it results in idolatry. And that's the thing, is that God does have a purpose for us. We put a ton of importance, as we talked about, put a ton of importance on things that he says little or nothing about. Being thin, I've tried to look in the concordance. I haven't found anything in Scripture about being thin yet. But he does talk a lot about holiness. And the goal is to be in a relationship with him and to be holy. To be in a relationship with him and to be holy. Micah 6:8 says, he has shown you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. What does he require of you? To walk humbly with your God. What does he want from you? What is his will for your life? Everyone wants to know that. To be in relationship with him. To be in relationship with him. I'm just going to give you these verses in case you're writing them down. We don't have time to go there right now. But he desires for you to be holy. Hebrews 12:14, 2 Corinthians 7:1, 1 Peter 1:15 and 16. Sorry. Hebrews 12:14, 2 Corinthians 7:1, 1 Peter 1:15 and 16. Leviticus 11:44 and 45. Leviticus 20:7 and 8. So I want tonight to redefine the goal. The goal is not to be thin. It is not to be overly focused on our appearance. It is to be in a relationship with God and to be holy. That is what his word says. That is the goal. And his truth is that your value does not have its origin in what you see in the mirror. It does not. Your value is like a dollar bill. How much is a dollar bill worth? Anyone? A dollar. Can you make it worth $1.50? Anyone? No? Can you make it worth 50 cents? How come? Huh? It's a dollar. Well, how come? You mean you can't change the value of a dollar? Why? The Treasury says so. Someone else predetermined the value of the dollar. so also someone else predetermined your value. You cannot make yourself worth $25. You're worth a buck. You cannot make yourself worth 25 cents. Nothing you can do can make you worth 25 cents. You're worth, I'm just kidding, it's not a dollar. Maybe it's zillions of dollars. I don't know. But the point is that it is unchanging. Your worth is not, you can't look good enough to be worth more. You can't screw up enough to be worth less. Your worth is unchanging. It is set by God. So quit trying. Quit trying. Quit spending your life trying to be worth more. You are worth everything, so much so that he died on a cross for your sin so that you could be in a relationship with him. And that by trusting in him, you could have eternal life and a relationship with him while you're here. That's how much you're worth. Who is determining your value? Culture, creator. For most of us, it's the culture. But I know that he desires for it to be him. So what's your response to all this? Your response should be transformed by the renewing of your mind. You have to fight this. You have to reprogram the data that is already in here. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. The renewing of your mind on what is true. You've got to load some new data. For me, I've had to reprogram over and over, and still day by day, I have to reprogram. When I look in my closet and I don't have the right color jeans to go with this outfit or the heels or makeup or wrinkles or whatever, I mean, I can't even keep up with all that stuff. And it stresses me out. But I'm like, no, that is not the goal. The goal is to be in relationship with him. But I have to reprogram myself every day. And sometimes there's a lot more reprogramming in the beginning. But still, it is every day, an everyday battle. But my last words of encouragement on this are we have to hate what we see, that we have let the culture dictate our value. And so pass it on to other people and pass it on to our kids. We do. We have to hate it. Otherwise, we're just sort of blasé to it. Oh, it doesn't really matter. And it does matter because it is impacting and destructive.